That's bassist Ron Carter with Miles Davis's All Blues, the title track of Carter's 1974 album. Joe Henderson on tenor sax, Sir Roland Hanna on piano, and Billy Cobham on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. A police cruiser's dash cam videotape that showed the brutal killing of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald by former Chicago Police Department cop Jason Van Dyke on October the 20th last year touched off a new round of protests yesterday after the videotape's court-ordered release. Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy were quick to call for calm and order, but local activists are demanding accountability and long overdue justice in this case and in others, not just in Chicago, but all across the nation. One of our listeners, in fact, is our correspondent today. It is Henry from Chicago. Henry, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Eutrice?
Fine, thank you. Well, you are our correspondent today from Chicago. What's happening in your city? How are people reacting to the developments of yesterday?
Well, the reaction here in Chicago is pretty much what's expected, basic outrage over the whole incident and the whole situation. However, it's not the expected reaction as media would like to see it, where, you know, you see folks rioting and looting and all that other kind of crazy stuff. But it seems like it's a more targeted type of outrage where, like yesterday, there was a mass demonstration on Michigan Avenue out by the downtown area, and that's the business part of Chicago district where a lot of stores are at and everything. So they kind of marched down Michigan Avenue to kind of disrupt the businesses down there. So it was more targeted effort and a little different than what we've seen in regards to protest when it comes to the police shootings of young black men. I think this is more to attack the economics of the Chicago business than anything.
From your perspective, your personal perspective, if you will, how is this? How do you relate to this event as an African American man? We've talked about these kinds of killings many times on this program, but here you are, and you're observing yet another outpouring of outrage over yet another, what has become another statistic, a sad statistic in this business of police killings. What's going on with you as you relate to this event?
Well, growing up in Chicago, it's not uncommon. If you ask any black man in Chicago who was raised in Chicago, if they were harassed or, you know, detained by the police at least once or twice in their lifetime. And this actually does not matter, you know, what your economic status was or what neighborhood you live in. You'd find it common amongst, you know, many black men in Chicago and probably in other metro areas where police harassment, especially by white police officers, is particularly normal. I'm a college educated person, and I don't act very aggressive towards anybody, but there have been times in my life where the police still, you know, harass me because of the fact of the color of my skin. And it's just a shame to say, just a couple of months ago, I had a harassment by a cop while my daughter was in the car. So it is just, you know, from my experience, it's plain racism to basically look at this, because like I said, I do everything right. I'm not a criminal. I've never had a criminal record, but yet I'm still accosted and harassed by the police. Not on a normal basis, but it's still there. So black men are being basically targeted by the police. And like I said, from my personal perspective, it happens whether, you know, you live in a low income area or you are, you know, what most people call middle class, you know, black American. So from my perspective, it has gone on in the culture of the police here in Chicago is as bad or as probably as worse as some of the things you've seen, like in New York City or even in L.A. with the trouble with police and the communities of color in those cities as well.
You mentioned that the tone of the reaction is different and in a way surprising to many, including the mayor of the city, including many in the media, who expected a far more violent reaction, but you described it as a targeted demonstration so far. What has happened today? We know overnight that there was an outpouring of thousands of people. What has happened today, and how does this indicate to you a change in the tone of the protest?
Well, today there's more planned demonstrations in the downtown area, in that same business district where they were protesting last night. And I think they're planning on doing this throughout the weekend, and particularly on, you know, quote-unquote Black Friday, where a lot of shoppers will be at. And there have been calls out from many leaders of the community and ministers to go out there and protest that day to get the word out and to basically show their support against police brutality. And I think it's very symbolic. It's a very symbolic effort in regards to, you know, doing something in regards to hurting the economy of, you know, of the Chicago businesses, because as Alton Maddox always says, the only two languages white supremacy understands is violence and economics. So, you know, we have to try the economic approach of trying to get the voice out there.
When Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy called for calm and order and basically said to Chicagoans that this tragedy presents yet another opportunity for understanding and bridging the great divide and things of that sort, of, you know, sentiments of that type, did it go over well with Chicagoans? Did they sound credible? Did they sound believable and sincere?
Well, from my perspective, no. It didn't go very well with Chicagoans, and especially, you know, those who have their eyes open. The press conference yesterday with Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy was, you know, basically just a CYA, you know, in regards to this whole situation, because if you look at it from a political perspective, this goes just beyond some racist white cop just shooting a black man. I mean, this goes down to be a very huge cover-up and conspiracy with this case, because, you know, as you have let people know yesterday, this happened a year ago, more than a year ago, and the situation of the dash cam just being, you know, requested through the Freedom of Information Act, because I believe there was an independent journalist named Brandon Smith who filed this and basically couldn't get any movement on it. So earlier this year, he had to file a lawsuit to get the dash cam video open to the public. And at the same time, a local news here from NBC5 did an investigation where a nearby Burger King where Laquan McDonald is located at, where the Laquan McDonald incident happened. The police that night went into the Burger King and virtually deleted the time of when their security cameras were showing Laquan McDonald being shot. So it's a vast cover up and conspiracy here, and then going into the $5 million settlement that was offered to the family of Laquan McDonald, despite the fact that the family didn't even file a lawsuit. So they just offered them $5 million, you know, without even going to court, and it was just weird how Rahm Emanuel and a lot of the aldermen who basically had to approve this settlement kept telling us that they didn't see the video. And that is just absolutely absurd and irresponsible if you haven't seen the video and you're going to give this family $5 million. So this is a very, very vast conspiratorial situation going on here.
Well, I want to ask about the political response by the representatives of the community. This case is more than a year old, and the circumstances were enough at the very beginning to engender some kind of suspicion and therefore a call from the political leadership into these things that we are now just finding out. What has the response of the political leadership been, especially since the protests have begun?
Well, I guess the response from the leadership is the calling for Gary McCarthy, the police superintendent, to resign, and also Anita Alvarez, who is the Cook County district attorney, because she and her office also have viewed the tape and held it, you know, up until this point. And basically there's a call for both of them to step down, but I still haven't seen a call for anybody, because the most implicit person in this whole thing is Rahm Emanuel, because he's the one that approves all this stuff. And I still haven't seen that going, but the pressure will probably mount on Gary McCarthy to resign. And I predict that he'll probably be the fall guy for this. And it'll probably be within the next couple of months, or maybe sooner than that, that he'll probably resign, and Chicago will probably have a new police chief, you know, by the beginning of the year. But as far as that concerned, the big political pressure by the leadership is the superintendent and the district attorney of Cook County.
Well, thanks, Henry, for giving us this insight into the protests as they begin to unfold with even greater vigor, demanding accountability, demanding answers. Thanks so much for contributing to the program today.
All right, thank you.
Well, let's hear that news conference yesterday when the mayor was expressing a desire that people should be calm and there shouldn't be all this violence as they saw in Ferguson, that people ought to behave themselves. And so we'll get to understanding what he said right after we hear this clip from Rahm Emanuel having his news conference along with Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy yesterday, calling for calm and order.
Good evening, everybody. You would think from the size of the number of people up here at the podium that we were here tonight to discuss good news, because unfortunately that's the way it usually goes. And in this case, we're here to talk about some bad news, but also some opportunity. As you all know, last year on October 20th, one of our police officers shot and killed a young man named Laquan McDonald. And since that time, the investigation into the circumstances of that event has been ongoing. The officer was stripped of his police powers immediately. As you all know, today he was charged with first-degree murder by the state's attorney, Anita Alvarez. And as a result, he's been put into what's known as a no-pay status. So he's no longer being paid by the Chicago Police Department. That is part of our contractual obligation with the Fraternal Order of Police here in Chicago, and that's the process that we've undergone. Every day in this city, you see thousands of officers performing admirably and making a difference every single day in the lives of individuals here in Chicago. The officer in this case took a young man's life, and he's going to have to account for his actions, and that's what today is all about. Today is about accountability. We're all accountable for our actions. Since I've come to this police department, you've heard me talk about accountability over and over and over again, and we all hold ourselves accountable. In this case, we have a tragic ending to, unfortunately, a tragic life of a young man who was betrayed on a number of different levels. And typically, these cases end up in the police department's hands, and in this case, it ended up in his death. We are not the least bit pleased about this, and at the end of the day, you got to respect the men and women who are out there doing this job every single day without incident, and when there are incidents, they're usually positive. As you know, last week, we were ordered to turn over the dash cam video of the events surrounding this particular endeavor, and we're prepared to do that. What I expect is the same thing that we talk about frequently, which is the fact that people have a right to be angry, people have a right to protest, people have a right to free speech, but they do not have a right to commit criminal acts. And at the end of the day, the Chicago Police Department is trained for, and we're one of the world leaders in mass demonstrations. We're prepared to facilitate people's First Amendment right to free speech. But we
All right. The sound quality really is not very, very good, so we will discontinue that, and I will tell you what had happened. The mayor and Superintendent Gary McCarthy called this news conference to impress upon Chicagoans that they were concerned about the possibility of Chicago erupting in violence, as they would like to say, violence, as Ferguson did, Ferguson, Missouri, in the aftermath of the shooting death of Michael Brown. That did not happen. Instead, we had what we just heard from Henry as a targeted and very different tone to the protests, because people were very much interested and focused on getting answers and specifically relating to what was shown via this dash cam videotape. The killing, the brutal killing, the execution, a public execution of this 17-year-old man, Laquan McDonald. This happened on October the 20th last year. And they want to know why, for more than a year, this particular incident did not go the route, the standard route of justice. It's a very simple question, a very simple demand. Instead, we got the platitudes by the superintendent, police superintendent Gary McCarthy, and we got platitudes from Rahm Emanuel saying at once that, we appreciate the fact that people are exercising their First Amendment rights, and we appreciate the severity of the situation, but under no circumstances are we going to tolerate disorder and this kind of stuff. They talk that talk. But they did not address the central question here. And the central question remains as potent today as it did on October the 20th last year. How is it possible, and why does it continue, that we see police officers behaving this way and with impunity, which is one thing, but who ultimately is to account for all the other pieces of this puzzle? That the police officer involved was not immediately disciplined. He was allowed to go on desk duty with pay. And only after things came to light was that interrupted. you have a scenario where a settlement is offered of $5 million to the family. Well, the settlement is offered, but there is no trial. So it means that the city administration, along with the police department, are in on this, including the prosecutor's office, because all these things have to be negotiated. All these things have to be worked out. We give the police officer an exit, and we just pay off the family. Say, look, here's $5 million. We're sorry that this happened, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the terms of settlement obviously will include secrecy. They're not to discuss the terms of the settlement. We've raised this question before on this program about the predictable route that many of these cases have taken, because the lawyers representing the families, instead of following through as true advocates, not only for the rights of the deceased and the family, but also in a sense of a class action, understand that the execution of their loved ones is applicable to the larger body, the class, if you will, of individuals who at any time could suffer the same fate. But their lawyers, so far, have not challenged the system. The lawyers enter into settlements quickly. They don't press at the very beginning for independent prosecutors. They don't press for the rights, not only of the deceased individual or individuals, but the rights of all others similarly situated. They're not engaged in political struggle. They're engaged in settlements. And they abuse the groundswell of support from people who are politically conscious and who understand the symbolism of these acts to mean that they apply to the broader community. That sentiment is mined, and that sentiment is exploited to the fullest in order to ramp up the dollar figure when it comes time to sit at the negotiation table. And they settle. That is to say, they trade off this political piece, this political side of it, which is the justice element, because this is what justice requires. They trade that in for a bigger cut of a bigger pie. But here, the question also means that we have to address why it is that the city offered a settlement right off the bat of $5 million to the family. Why would the lawyers accept it? And why would they agree to terms that in any other scenario would be considered unconscionable? You're being bought off. And I could take that to the extreme to say, well, hey, you're satisfied, really, with money and not with justice. So maybe you wouldn't mind if another person, maybe his brother, maybe his uncle, maybe a son, would similarly be executed. That gives you 5 million times two, times three. Is that where we are in terms of political activism? Is this what this all means? The people in the street being used as shills to shore up the settlement sum. But the question is, this mayor has to answer that. This mayor has to account for the corruption. This mayor has to now be made the symbol of the prosecutorial and official misconduct that occurs with these kinds of cases. They are part and parcel of the problem. They can talk now about law and order. Let's not have chaos. Let's not have people going into these violent rages. Because they're not talking to black people. They're talking at black people, but they're talking to white America about black people. They're talking a code. We got this. Now, what we need is for these people, even in the middle of all of this craziness, that clearly smells to the high heavens of corruption. But we will set all of that aside. What we need is for you people, you people, to behave. Just behave. And if you don't, even in your grief, even in your outrage, we have the mechanisms to control you just the same. Now, when cases like these occur, they're not one-offs. They're not one-time things. They're connected. There's a long history of this happening. The abuses stretch beyond the police officer because the police officer is protected by the union, the fraternal order of police, sit down with the police commissioner or the police superintendent, as is the case in Chicago, and they work out a little something. And what they're working out is a soft place for this errant cop to land. Give him a decent exit. Never mind the black man he killed. But he deserves a decent exit. Why? Because he is a white guy and a white cop wearing a uniform. And that is what we are first and foremost called to serve. That's what white supremacy is. The system protecting itself. So they arranged this. They arranged even for the mayor to sign off. Look, we have a potentially bad situation here. It's politically dicey, but if we handle this well, it would be okay. Bottom line, let's cough up some money. Let's give these parents a little something, a token of our apologies and sorrow. And we will move on. They will agree because the Corporation Council, there's another layer of corruption. The city's lawyers will have them sign papers. They are not to reveal the terms and conditions of settlement. They are to take the money and disappear, go away. Problem solved. The taxpayers now would have underwritten injustice and corruption. Nobody is being called to task yet. Nobody is being called to account yet for the wholesale abrogation of duty. That is understood to be their sole prerogative. They get to decide when to be moral and correct. The city council, which will include, of course, African Americans and Latinos, representing the two constituencies that by far suffer inordinately this particular problem. But their leaders will sign off because Rahm Emanuel, has asked them to do so. The police commissioner says, yes, we want that too. The Fraternal Order of Police says, yes, we want that too. And despite the fact that they know it is wrong, it will be wrong to do something like that, because we're talking here not about a specific case, we're talking about a class situation. But they'll sign off on it. So corruption spreads to them too. The prosecutor's office will then have to agree. The prosecutor, who should automatically subject this case to very close scrutiny, the prosecutor will now say, well, we could avoid all of this and bring this to a swift end if we just go along with this settlement process. We will overlook our duty to defend this man's constitutional rights to his life. We will not prosecute the police officer. We will take no actions against him. We will exempt him because we all pretty much are on the same page. Prosecutorial misconduct. They knowingly, basically, are signing off on a murder. That's how they do it. Everybody agrees. Because the dead person comes from a politically unprotected class. The dead person, more than likely, is a person of color. More than likely is a male person of color, and I have to stress that because that in itself is a threat. And more than likely poor. So that person probably cannot afford, the family can't afford, an aggressive and knowledgeable litigator, or one with the guts to take on the system. So you see the vicious circle, all predicated on one thing, and that is, this victim comes from an expendable class. This person, and this is the history of America, this person does not get to benefit from rights and privileges as a citizen. You may recall we discussed this whole issue about who is a citizen and how deeply ingrained this question is in this country. Who is to have rights? Who is to be protected by this thing called the Constitution? Who has natural rights? And who has civil rights? Who has rights that are etched in stone, and who has rights that are totally negotiable? Who is expendable and who is worthy? This is what we're dealing with. It looks like a case, a cut and dried criminal case, but it brings into the realm of consideration all these things that we've been talking about, because they come to bear here, and we see how in every single instance, every component part, including the African-American leadership involved, whether in the legal realm or in the legislative realm, how people themselves factor into the betrayal of their own people's interests. You see? And this is how pernicious it is. And this is why we will all indulge into this game of denying the reality that we're existing in. They will tell you this is a separate case. This is a case all by itself, has no connection with anything else. This is a case of whether the police officer, Jason Van Dyke, did in fact murder this man, or was he well within departmental guidelines when he shot this 17-year-old 16 times. And clearly, for no justifiable reason, even when he insisted that he was afraid for his life. You see how it works? Every single aspect of this case corrupted. And every single aspect of this case agreeing to cooperate with the corruption. Including the people from his own community who should have been advocating, who should have been taking on Rahm Emanuel. We see this, for example, in New York City, the case of Eric Garner, a similar case. Here is a man choked to death on camera. It was captured. No possible defense here, one would think. He was killed, choked to death. The police officer applied what the department itself said is illegal and is not to be done. Well, he did it. Officer Daniel Pantaleo brought him down. And then the component parts went into effect, all predicated on these racist notions, white supremacist notions about who is worthy and who is not. The medical crew that comes to the scene, we don't really, I mean, you could see on camera, they made no extraordinary effort to save this man. They didn't administer life-saving measures as if he were a, quote, normal human being. He was not a normal human being. And they understand that. That is ingrained in them. That is their day-to-day thinking. That is what the society conditions them. By the time they arrived on the scene, they were interested in only one thing. If there's anybody who really matters to be taken care of, it would have to be a uniformed police officer. If not a member, if it's not one of them, then it can take their time. They don't have to rush and get all excited and act professionally and perform the tasks that the taxpayer dollars are paying for. You see it on camera. The man is dying. And they're, well, they're, you know, hopefully, let's see if we could get him to the hospital. And it kind of, there's no excitement there. There's no furious action going on to save his life. It was decided from the word go. This man belongs to them. He's not one of us. You see? And then the prosecutor's contribution is that he would somehow organize it so that this case will turn out the way it eventually did. We predicted it here on the program, not because we're so brilliant, but because this is what history tells us. You only have to follow the historical record. And you can predict with alarming precision how these cases will turn out. So these are the questions that need to be raised. And again, in the Garner case, you see black lawyers coming to the fore, and you say, well, finally something is going to happen. But nothing happens that indicates they're interested in a fight. Nothing indicates that they are interested in taking on the system. Nothing indicates that they understand that the case that they're handling is actually a class action, in the sense that Eric Garner represents people similarly situated, black men who come up in contact with the police, bent on aggressively doing harm to them. They're interested in settlement because that's where their money is. And they stir up the public. Look how horrific this is. And no justice, no peace. And Al Sharpton comes out and talks about it. And Jesse Jackson talks about it. And they get all excited because they are civil rights icons. And who better to talk about a civil rights issue than civil rights leaders? But we're talking here not about civil rights. We know those are negotiated all the time. There are no absolute rights that any black person has in this country, not even the right to life itself. That too is negotiable. And so they go along with the system and they tell people about how atrocious this is. We shouldn't have this kind of thing, not in modern America, and we are doing this. Nothing suggests that they were interested in a fight. There's not one piece of paper that says we have filed a crapload of legal actions compelling the state to appoint a special prosecutor in this case. Oh, no. That's not happening. Because they joined that team. And then all of this energy, all of this outpouring of energy by well-meaning people and by people who truly understand what the problem is and who in their own way are trying to make a contribution so that things move in the opposite direction to empowerment, they undermine it. And they use that energy in order to get a bigger payout because they get a bigger cut. And the payout is justice. And look, Eric Garner is dead and gone. And all of the goodies are being shared by the people who should have been fighting for his life and the lives of his family and the lives of the larger family, who are similarly situated. But they're doing well. They've been rewarded. They have cooperated with the system and they have been co-opted by the system. In fact, I would even go so far as to say they volunteered for co-optation. That's what we've got. For the most part, that's what we've got. I keep saying nothing that we are experiencing is happening in a vacuum. A lot of energy is being poured into making it appear to be so, so that we don't make sense of our reality by linking the historical record. We will see if we did link the historical record. We will see that Laquan McDonald is Eric Garner, is Michael Brown, is tens of thousands of people whose names we don't even know. But we know one thing, and that is that more often than not, they belong to us. They are from us. They are from our community. They don't have to qualify for my concern. And nobody gets to tell me who I should be concerned about and who I should not be concerned about and on what basis I ought to be concerned and what position I ought to take. It is very clear. There's only one position to take. And that is, these dead people, dead because the police have done what they historically have been doing. It is time to end it, and it is time to make sure that anybody acting incorrectly, wrongfully, must pay a price. There is no question what the intention should be of Chicagoans today. It should have been evident a long time ago. Rahm Emanuel should never, ever have a political future, if you're serious. The police officer involved should never, ever, ever be thinking that he could get close to anything relating to a police officer's job ever in his life. If we're serious, the city of Chicago, the economy should come to a grinding halt as of tomorrow. If you're serious, you will not support a system that supports this. No African American or Latino leader siding with this should have a political future ever in life again because of this, if you're serious. No Democrat should ever grace your doorstep ever again, if you're serious. You will not tolerate this if you're serious. But we're not serious, are we? We are not serious. And so the system understands that. From time to time, we raise a little dust. And we raise a little dust within the narrow confines of the issue. We don't link these things. We don't say, here is slavery all over again. We don't invoke our history, our historical references, to truly link ourselves with this problem. We say, well, you know, we are opposed to police brutality. Okay, since when is that an enlightened position? You're opposed to police brutality. Big deal. It should go a little deeper than that by now. We are opposed to police brutality, and we honor our ancestors. How about that? We cannot delink or unlink the two. We are opposed to this and we affirm that. We reject this, but we insist on that. Minister Louis Farrakhan recently had a gathering in Washington, D.C. as an observance of the Million Man March. Justice, he said, or else. Well, I like the justice part. Or else what is the question? Justice, yes. Or else what? Nobody is telling us or else what. But we have to get to that point. Or else what? Be prepared to tell you, to tell us what it is, what that what is. But because we have accepted the inevitability of negotiation of our rights and even of our lives, we no longer ask these questions. We consider these things academic and unimportant. Which is why we have the anomaly, the direct insult to our historical memory to have people tell us about voting for the Democratic Party. You couldn't possibly be in touch with your history and regard the Democratic Party, the party of the slavocracy, with any degree of credibility. You have to literally be out of your mind to entertain even faintly that possibility. But we're not asking the questions, and therefore whatever answers they appear to give us, we will accept. And they know that because they have fashioned our minds. So here we are once again. Another life taken in the same historic way that we know very well. If you're not familiar with the history of patterollers, which is where the word patrollers come from, if you're not intimately linked to that history, I suggest you do get linked to it and understand that today in 2015, there is no significant alteration of the power equation between African Americans and Latinos and people of color generally and the power, the white supremacist powers of the United States at every level. There's no definitive change. It has remained remarkably consistent, remarkably impervious to change. And still people think they will expend all this effort and energy in trying to change it. No, the effort and energy should be spent in trying to change you. Change your attitude. Change your knowledge. Change your history by changing your actions. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, especially since I went off a little bit there, but these things I feel very passionate about. And I think we ought to be real about where we are as a nation, but especially as an oppressed group within the nation. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know how these things have said are resonating with you. Thank you so much for joining me today. Tomorrow, please take time to be with people who bring positive dimension to your life. We do not want to repeat the prevailing philosophy about Thanksgiving, but we do want to take the time to express to those people who have played a great role in our lives of bringing support and positive dimension to our lives. We thank them for that. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.